Okay, we're starting here by the two dots on the towards the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Bet. Over there, Reish Lakish Amar Hamani, who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Meiri, Demar Luke Umishalim. The author of our Mishnah and the reason why one pays a knas in our Mishnah, despite the fact that the Mishnah in Makot says that you get Makot for all of these instances, is because it's authored by Rabbi Meir, who believes that you are Luke Umishalim, and we've seen Rabbi Meir just a couple of daf ago. And then, I Rabbi Meir, Afilu Bito Nami. If the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, then Bito Nami, which is actually, the Gemara here sees it as our Mishnah, but it's really the upcoming Mishnah, which says to us, certain people do not pay a knas. One of those individuals who doesn't pay a knas is Bito. The person is Me'anes Bito. Then he doesn't pay a knas, because there's Kamle Derabimine. Because there's a Chiyuv Skila versus over here, where there's only a Chiyuv Karet. So if Rabbi Meir thinks Lokeh Mishalim that you can have two punishments, then why not over there? V'chitema, so what do you want to suggest? Rabbi Meir, Lokeh Mishalim Itlei, Meitu Mishalim Leilei. Maybe Rabbi Meir's din can be bifurcated this way, which is when there's Malkot and Tashlum, they come up against each other, then you pay both of them. You get the Malkot, plus you pay the money. But Meitu Mishalim, if he is Chayav Mita, and he has to pay, over there he'll agree that there's Kamlei Derabimine, and you would not pay. Velo, is that really true? V'atanyo. We have a brayta. Ganav v'tabach b'shabbat. He steals, and then he does tzvicha, he shechs it on Shabbat. Ganav v'tabach d'avodat kochavim. He steals it, and then he shechs it d'avod azara. Ganav shor niskal utivacho. He steals a shor niskal, an animal that is on death row, and then he shechs it. Mishalim tashlumei arba'a v'chamisha. In all these instances, he plays four or five times, which is the punishment for stealing an animal and selling it, or stealing an animal and shechting it. T'vacho micharo, we learned that in the Mishnayot in Bava Kamma, that you pay four or five times for that type of theft. But in this case, he shechted it on Shabbat, which is a violation of Shabbat. Chiyuv mita. He shechted it l'avodah zarah. Chiyuv mita. Despite that fact, Rabbi Meir says, Mishalim, Tashlumei Arba V'chamisha, Divrei Rabbi Meir. So you see, Rabbi Meir says, even, Meit U'Mishalim. V'chamim Potrim, and the Chachamim say, Kamlei D'Rabbi Minei. Over here, there's a Chiyuv Mita. There's no reason that you should be paying. Hayit Marla. On that, we have a qualifying statement by the Amoraim. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'Amri La, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Ila, V'chol Chavurata, Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Ila say it over in the name of the whole Beit Midrash, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Amrei, B'toveach Ayadei Acher. Someone else does the Shechita. So he didn't do the Shechita, someone else does the Shechita. So someone else did the Shechita, then the violation of Shabbat, or the violation of Avodah Zarah, was not done by the individual who stole it, the one who's going to pay the four or five times. And therefore, there's no kamle derabimine. So now, Gemara says, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. A stole the item. B does the shechita. And then A has to pay for it. Why does A have to pay for the tzvicha mechira? He's not the one who did it. He's obligated as far as the theft is concerned. He stole it. Someone else shechted it. Why is he then culpable for someone else's shechita? Amarov amarachmona utivacho o mecharo. It says that either he shechs it or he sells it. One of those two will obligate him in paying four or five times, depending on which animal that he stole. Ma mechira ayudei acher, af tevicha ayudei acher. Just like selling it can only be accomplished with a third party, so too, shechita can be done ayudei acher by someone else, and you'd still be culpable for it. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, o the rabot et ha-shaliach. Debei Rabbi Shmuel says the word o, tevacho o mecharo, that o comes to teach you that a shaliach is included. The Bechizki Atanu Tachat, that it says, instead of or in place of, the Rabota the Shaliach, again, they're thinking that these words are extraneous. The word O, you could have just written it to Vacho Umecharo. The fact that you had the word O is extraneous. And the word Tachat, you could have said Yishalem Vishor, instead of Yishalem Tachat Hashor. So because both of those words are extraneous, from that, these two Tanaim, or Bati Midrash, learn out that a shliach is chayav. Because otherwise we know from the Gemara in Kedushin, Ein shliach l'dvar aveira. Nobody can be your agent to accomplish an aveira. If they do it, they're responsible for the action, because we say, divrei harav v'divrei ha'talmid divrei mishomim. If you have an obligation to listen to God, and you're listening to me instead, that's a talmid versus the rav, your obligation is to listen to your Rebbe, to listen to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, your master. In that case, when you go ahead, the shliach goes ahead and executes whatever agency that he's been asked to do, he's responsible for his own actions, because he shouldn't have listened to the person who is sending him, but rather he should listen to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So ain't shliach devar aveira. So how come over here there is a shliach devar aveira? The answer being one of these limudim. Ma mechira yidei acher, avtzbicha yidei acher, one, or debei Rabbi Shmo, debei Chizkia, either from the extra word o or the extra word tachat, that even a shliach, even a proxy or an agent, can shechtir, and you will be chayav, you will be culpable for tvacho o mecharo. Matik v'la marzutra, mi gamidei dilu avarihu lo mechayev, v'avid shliach u mechayev. How is it possible that if the individual did it himself, he would not be held culpable? Yet, if he has a proxy, an agent do it for him, then he is chayav. Generally, we say, shlucho shel adam kimoto, is like him. That means that whatever you can do, your shliach, your agent, can do on your behalf. Over here, if the individual themselves did the shechita, they would be patur. They would have a chi of mitah for Shabbat, a chi of mitah for avodah zarah, and they'd be patur for the tashlumim. All of a sudden, they make an agent to go ahead, a shliach, to go ahead and do the shechita. Now they're going to be chayav for the payment. That means that the shliach is more powerful than you. You say, shlucho shel adam kimoto, here it's shlucho shel adam yoter mimenu, is even greater than him. If it was the individual themselves, it wouldn't be chayav. Now, through a shliach, through a proxy, is chayav. Gemara says something very, very important, fundamental, which is, iu la mishum delo mechayev. The reason that he is patur over here is not because he is not chayav. El mishum, dekam le derab aminei. But because we punish him with the more severe punishment. So the Gemara here says something extremely fundamental. She says here, the chiyuva rami ale. The person is really chayav. The truth is that the person is obligated to make the restitution, to make the tashlumim over here. And the only reason he is patur is because he has a death penalty that is associated with him, because he was violating the Shabbat. He violated avodah zarah. That death penalty exempts him from the obligation, but it doesn't mean that he's not obligated. He is chayav, but he has an exemption over here. That exemption is what makes him patur, but not to say that he is not chayav to really pay. So now, the Gemara is saying something that is very important in understanding kamle dirabe minei, which is, how does kamle dirabe minei work? When we say that you get the more severe punishment, we mentioned this in passing before, what does it mean? There are three different ways you could formulate it. Kamle dirabe minei could either mean that when a person is faced with two punishments, we give the more severe punishment, and there's no obligation with regards to the other punishment. The other obligation never gets off the ground. You're not culpable for it all. That's one way to formulate. Or there's a possibility that you say here, that you have two punishments, and we can only punish an individual once, not twice, and we're going to give them the more severe of the two punishments. So that's the reason that the other one falls away, is not because you weren't culpable, just simply we give the more severe of the two. Or we can say that the severity of the other punishment subsumes in it the punishment that you were supposed to get, or the lighter punishment that was supposed to be given is subsumed under the greater punishment. What's the difference between them? There's a concept, the Ktzot Tachoshen has a big piece on this, a very famous piece on this, about whether you have to be, let's say, Yedei Shamayim. Do you have to pay? If you have a situation where there's kamlei derabe minei, a person violates the Shabbat, in the meantime, they cause damage to their friend, so they're patur on that damage. Let's say Yedei Shemayim, do you have to pay? You're right, you're exempt. You do not have to pay. But let's say Yedei Shemayim, so that you take care of it. Okay, so that's a good question. David raises the question of whether it was b'mezid or b'shogeg. We know that in both instances, he will not have to make compensation to his friend, restitution to his friend, if he did damage. If he did it b'mezid, or if he did it b'shogeg. So the question is, in a case where b'mezid, he gets punished, and he gets the death penalty, is there still room to say, let's say, Yedei Shemayim, that he has to make payment? He has to compensate here because he did cause the damage. He's exempt. He doesn't have to pay it, because that's the rules of the Torah. That doesn't mean that he didn't cause the damage. Doesn't mean that he really should pay it. Again, that depends on whether you think the obligation or culpability ever got off the ground, and whether the more severe punishment takes care of the lesser punishment. But if you simply say there's an exemption here because you're getting the more severe punishment, you really would still have to pay. And even more so, a mere striking is when bishogeg. In a case where bishogeg, you become patur, there's going to be no punishment. And when there's no punishment, and you don't have to pay because of the death penalty that would have come had you done it b'mezid, then do you have to compensate there? There's no death penalty, and you're still not paying. Then we'll have to do the different ways that we formulated the reason why kamla d'rabbi minei works, or why it exempts you. From here, from the Gemara, it sounds like, and Rashi says this, that there is an obligation. Chiyuv eram le'alei. The person is obligated to make compensation over here. He's just exempted. Now again, he could be exempted for one of two reasons. The punishment is so severe that it covers both of them. In that case, then, b'mezid, you should be exempt. By the case of shogeg, you should still have to pay because you're not getting the punishment. The other possibility is that in ochanami, you should be paying. It's just that when you have two punishments, we're going to give you the severe one, we're not going to give you the other one. In that case, you should have to pay even b'mezid. Let's say the Yidei Shamayim, you should still have to pay. So it happens to be that the Ktot HaChoshen thinks that in these instances you should be Letzeit Yidei Shamayim, and that you should have to pay in all these instances. I think there's a Pitchei Tshuvo and the Netivot HaMishpat over there that disagrees and says that that's not the case. Our Gemara seemingly is a proof to that position that there is a Chiyuv, that there is an obligation despite the fact that there's commonly the Rabbi Minei. Although Tosafot deflates that completely, and Tosafot says, even though over here there's no obligation, let's say mitzamayim, the dafka b'mamonu, because that's the case of mamon. Ava kanas lo mechayev el api beitin. By kanas you're only chayav api beitin. So what Tosafot says is that reason to be mechayev or to be let's say yidei shemayim, because let's say yidei shemayim is only relevant when you're talking about monetary matters. Person did damage. Then he has to go pay and compensate because there's obvious the cost or the damage that he caused. Over by Knas, a person only chayav fines when Beit Din obligates them in a fine. A person, if they admit to doing something wrong, they're not obligated in a Knas. Modi b'Knas is patur. So over here, until he is made culpable by Beit Din, the Knas doesn't exist. The chayuv doesn't exist at all. So Tosafot says over here, there is no need to make restitution or to pay the Knas. Because here, he's going to be patur. And when we say that, v'shum dekamal rabbi minei, means that the knas is gone. Beit Din doesn't even entertain the knas. Since they don't entertain the knas, you can't be chayav. But now, then, if that's true, then what is the Gemara saying over here? That he's really chayav, but he's kamal rabbi minei. So Tosafot says that shehaya ra'ui lehit chayav. He should have been chayav. We just can't get him to that point, but he should have been chayav. Not that he's actual chayav. So that changes the dynamic of what's being said here in the Gemara. That when the Gemara here says that, chiyuvei ram yalei, not like Rashi who says you're really obligated, but the Kamar of your name is Poteriu, Tosafot says you're not even chayav. Just means that you could have been chayav had it not been for the chiyuv mita. And that's why your shliach can cause you the same damage, or can cause you to be culpable, even though you yourself would not be culpable. But it says, ibe toveach hayidei vecher, maitamayu derabonon depatre. Alright, now you explained Rabbi Meir so well. The reason that you're chayav over here, even though there would have been commonly drabim meis, because someone else did the tvicha. So someone else has the death penalty, not the person that stole it, and that's why you're obligated. But then why do the rabbanon say you're patur? Why do the rabbanon say commonly drabim meis if it's done on yidei acher? Man chachamim. Who are the chachamim in that braita that we just quoted? Rabbi Shimoni. That is Rabbi Shimon. The amar shchita she'ena ruya lo shma shchita. That when you do a shchita that doesn't turn out to be a good shchita, it's not called shchita. So Rabbi Shimon believes in order to be culpable in cases where the Torah says you have to do shchita, for instance, there are three cases where this is relevant. One is the shchita for oto ved bino. When you do shchita for oto ved bino, is that called a good shchita? If you're not allowed to do it, then once you do it, is it called a shchita because you're not allowed to do it? Shchita et chutz. Also, when you do a shchita outside of the mikdash and korbanot, is that called shchita? You have to be only chayav when it's shchita tchut. If you do b'chutz, it's not a shchita anymore because it's not roi liot shchita. Same thing on Shabbat. Might have the same question. Person does shchita on Shabbat. Is that a good shchita? So over here as well, the shchita that he's doing is not going to result in a good shchita, and therefore you will not be held culpable. The Torah might say that you're chayav in certain instances if you kill the animal, the hakek tesh atzai, but if you do shechita and it's not called shechita, you're not chayav. Over here it says tfacho, and Tosafot takes up the fact that it doesn't say shechita, it says tfacho, but nevertheless, he says tfacho means shechita, and therefore Rabbi Shimon says, you know what? You didn't do shechita over here. So tina chavodat kochavim v'shara niskal. That works well for the cases of avodah zarah. When you shechta avodah zarah, that's not a shechita that gets you a kosher animal to eat afterwards. Shor niskal, that's an animal that's on death row. Also, you shecht it, it's asur ba'achila. It's asur ba'ana. So over there, if you shecht it, you're not going to get a kosher animal on the other end. So therefore, you shouldn't be chayav for tvachol mecharo. Elo shechitat Shabbat, shechita ruyahu. By shechita and Shabbat, that's a good shechita. Someone does shechita and Shabbat, the individual is chayav for doing the shechita, he will be put to death, but the animal itself is kasher, ditznan. We have a Mishnah. Shochet b'Shabbat u b'Yom HaKippurim. Person does shechita and Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim, both times where it's a sur, as opposed to Yom Tov where it's mutar. Af al pi shemitchayev b'nafsho, even though he is subject to the death penalty, shechitato k'shera, his shechita is just fine. So therefore, you see that it's a fine shechita. So on Shabbat, why would we say that the chachamim over here, who are supposedly Rabbi Shimon, would say that this individual is not chayav arba v'chamisha because he didn't have a good shechita? He does have a good shechita. So then why not be chayav arba v'chamisha where a third party, a shliach, does this shechita? Where it says he holds like Rabbi Yochanan Hasandlar. Rabbi Shimon, number one, says shechita sheni v'yuhal, the shechita is not a good shechita. Then in addition to that, we're going to say in this braita, he also holds like Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, who says that when you do shechita on Shabbat, it is asur. You can't eat from that animal if you do shechita on Shabbat. The Tanya, we have a braita. Truthfully, it's a commission that's brought in Baba Kama and Shabbat as well. But here the Gemara calls it a Tanya because it adds in an additional aspects here that are not found in the Mishnah, therefore calls it a braita, the Tosefta, which they're quoting over here, which is a Mevashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg. Person who cooks on Shabbat unintentionally, Yochal, he can't eat it. B'mezid, lo yochal. If it's done intentionally, he may not eat it. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That is the position of Rabbi Meir. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, B'shogeg yochal, person eats yochal, afilu bo bayom. Even on that day itself, you can eat it. B'mezid, if you do it intentionally, lo yochal, hu leolam. Rashi says that the person who did it can never eat it. But other Jews can eat it after Shabbat is over. Rashi says here, and Rashi says it as well in the Gemara in Chulin, where they quote this as well, which is that you have to wait kadesh yasu, that you have to wait the amount of time that it would take you to do this after Shabbat, so you shouldn't benefit from melacha on Shabbat. Now Rashi is interesting over here. By Shogeg, he says Yochal, and Tosfot mentions this as well, which is that by Shogeg Yochal, that we do not differentiate between him, the person who did the Avera, and anybody else. He can eat it right away, and so can other people eat it right away. That's number one. B'mezid, Rashi differentiates between the individual and other people. The individual may never eat it. The other people can eat it after Shabbat. The truth is that Rashi, not here, but Rashi in Chulin and other places does not say that. Rashi in other places says that the din is the same for him and anybody else. Over here, Rashi differentiates the din. And the Shittim HaGubetz talks about why maybe over here Rashi changed the din versus what he says in other places. But most Rishonim believe over here when we say B'shogeg Yochal, B'mezid lo Yochal, that is everybody. That's him and anybody else. That's the way Rabbi Meir believes. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'shogeg Yochal L'motzei Shabbat, B'mezid lo Yochal Olomit. On Shogeg you can eat it on Motzei Shabbat, B'mezid you cannot eat it forever. So now, the way that to set this up, Tosafot says this principle. The basic principle is that everybody's mezid is the next shita's shogeg. So Rabbi Meir's mezid is Rabbi Huda's shogeg. And then Rabbi Huda's mezid is going to be Rabbi Yochanan Sandar's shogeg. So that's how you know how to line these shitot up. Therefore, when Rabbi Huda over here says, b'shogeg yochal l'motzei Shabbat, that means l'motzei Shabbat, if he does it unintentionally, you can eat it. That means both him and the other party. Because again, in Rabbi Meir, when we said b'mezid lo yochal, that was both parties, except for Rashi over here differentiates. So there, according to Rashi, he would have to differentiate in Rabbi Yehuda as well in the shogeg part. But the most people believe that b'shogeg yochal and motzei Shabbat is everybody, but the motzei Shabbat again is kadesh yasu, the amount of time that it would take to do that melacha on motzei Shabbat. Why? Because we don't want you getting hana'ah from melachet Shabbat. So you did it on Shabbat. We don't want you to get any benefit from that. How do I make sure you don't get any benefit from that? I made you wait until Motzei Shabbat. But not only to Motzei Shabbat, the amount of time it would take you to do it after Shabbat. Therefore, there is no benefit from you shechting on Shabbat versus doing it after Shabbat. That's how I remove the problem of Hana from Melechet Shabbat. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's the case by Shogeg. By Mezid, lo yochol olamit means, if you look in Tosafot, but it says, by Mezid lo yochol olamit, who? Av alecherim ochlim. Other people can't eat, and that is, we'll see from, he learns that at Rabbi Yochanan Sadlar. Because Rabbi Yochanan Sadlar, by Shogeg, says that, and therefore by Mezid, for Rabbi Yehuda, we would say lo yochol olamit means for the guy who did the melacha, but not for the other parties who are not subject to it. They can eat it, b'kadeshi asu. So here you have two principles. One principle is we don't want anybody getting hana from Melechet Shabbat. So not getting hana from Melechet Shabbat, that's whether it's done b'shogeg or mezid. That means you have to wait k'deshi asu after Shabbat in order to use it. That's both b'shogeg and mezid. In addition to that, we also want to penalize the individual who did the melacha. So when he does it b'mezid, when he does it intentionally, we penalize him and say he can never eat it. That's the penalty that goes to him. B'shogeg, he did it unintentionally there. There's no reason to give him a penalty because he didn't do it intentionally. He did it unintentionally. And because of that, we will not penalize him to say that he can't eat it olamit. So that's the understanding of Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Yehuda Shita is premised on those two things. No hanah from Melechet Shabbat. That's across the board. Shogeg, mezid, no matter what. The person who did it plus other people, no hanah. That means you have to wait k'deshi asu. In addition to that, we add on top of that, that if the person himself did it intentionally, then he's penalized. He can't eat it olamit. Because we're trying to prevent someone from doing this type of behavior. So that's how Tosafot knew what Rabbi Yehuda meant, because Bishogeg, Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar is gozer shogeg atu mezid. Because otherwise, if you tell people mezid that not, but then shogeg, okay, they're gonna lie basically and say they did it bishogeg. So what he says is bishogeg yochal lemotzei shabbat acherim. For other people who are not the executors of the malacha here, then they just have to wait till after Shabbat, so they don't get hana mi melechet Shabbat. But not the person himself, he can't eat it by Motzei Shabbat, because where goes there, shogeg al tu mezid. Just like by mezid, we're going to penalize the individual who did the melacha. So to be shogeg, we're going to penalize the one who did the melacha. By mezid, lo lo yochal alamit, lo lo, v'lo acherim. If he does it intentionally, then he can't use it ever. And we understand that. That's a penalty for him doing the melacha. Lo achemim, why can't other people get benefit from it? Okay, they wait k'deshi asu. Why are they asur lomit? That's the one piece we don't understand here, Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, and that's what the Gemara asks now, my time to Rabbi Yochanan Sandar. Why does Rabbi Yochanan Sandar say that when it comes to other people, they're penalized b'mezid? K'dedarish Rabbi Chia pitchot b'nisiya, like the drush Rabbi Chia that he gave at the doorway, at the opening to the house of the Nasi, or the Beit Midrash of the Nasi, ushmartem et ha-shabbat ki kodesh ilachem. You have to keep the Shabbat because it is Kodesh for you. Minyan Adiyoma, Parshat HaShavua. Ma Kodesh Asur Be'achila. Af Maaseh Shabbat Asurim Be'achila. Just like Kodesh has an Isur Achila associated with it, it says Ki Kodesh Ilachem. So too Melechet Shabbat have that same thing. Melechet Shabbat is Asur Be'achila. Im HaKodesh Asur Be'ana, Af Maaseh Shabbat Asur Be'ana. If you're going to make such a parallel, just like Kodesh, not only is it Asur Be'achila, Kodesh is also Asur Be'ana. You can't get any benefit from Kodesh. So too, by Melechet Shabbat, we would say, not only can't you eat it, but you also can't get anah from it. Tomer omar lachem, shelachem yehei, that it's yours. Yochol afilu bishogeg, I would thought even bishogeg, tomer omar, mechalalea, motzumat. The continuation there of the pasuk is that those people that profane the Shabbat will die. B'mezid amarti lechavalo bishogeg. That's only b'mezid and not b'shogeg. So Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar has a very basic principle, which is, Melechet Shabbat not only affect the individual who executes the Melechah on Shabbat, but also affects the object on which the Melechah was performed. The object itself becomes an object of Isur. According to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah or the Braita that we brought about Bishul B'Shabbat, the Melechah, anything that we talked about there were penalties to the individual who did it, or to stop people getting benefit from melacha that was done on Shabbat. But the object itself remains mutar. The object itself, there's no problem with it. We're just trying to prevent people from doing this. How do we do this? We penalize the individuals, or we stop individuals from eating until k'deshi asu after Shabbat. But that's all that's there. The meat itself is kosher 100%. Anything that he did is totally fine. Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar has a big chiddush here, which is that melechet Shabbat not only is the individual does it problematic, and we have to penalize them, but the object of itself becomes isur, becomes like treif. How does he know that? From the limud, from the pasuk. Now, that's only by bezid, number one. Is it become treif? Number two, is it becomes treif that it's asur b'achila, it's not asur b'hana'ah. But nevertheless, it's asur. That's why when he does it b'mezid, he can't eat it. Okay, fine. That's because we're penalizing him who did the macha. But nobody else can eat it either. Olamit, nobody else can eat it because now it's isur. It's like treif. It's real isur over here. So now, pligi ba ravacha v'ravina. There's a machlok between Ravina and ravacha with regards to this position of Yochanan and Zalar. Chadamar masay Shabbat d'oraita. One of them says that when you do malacha on Shabbat, the object becomes asur mid'oraita, min ha-Torah. Chadamar d'rabanan. And one says it only becomes asur mid'rabanan. It only becomes treif d'rabanan. Mandamar d'oraita kidamran. The one who says d'oraita, then we're fine. We have the limud from the pasuk. We understand why it's d'oraita and also solves our problem as to why when the person does shechita on Shabbat, that it's not considered to be a good shechita. It's a shechita she'en ruya, because this is Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar. It says, if you do shechita b'mezid on Shabbat, the object afterwards is asur. You didn't do a good shechita. You can't eat that animal. It's done. So that's how we understand this whole thing. Manda amar derabanan, the one who says that's derabanan, amar kra kodeshi. So then what is he going to say? You have the pasuk that we learned before. He learns the pasuk differently. It says kodeshi. He kodesh ven maseha kodesh. That Shabbat is kodesh, because Shabbat is holy, but its actions are not holy. Its actions do not impact on the objects that are taken here. Oh, the man d'amar d'rabanan. According to one who says that it's only nisu d'rabanan, maitai mayu d'rabanan. And patre, again, why the rabanan over here? Why they puter? This is a shchuta ha-ri'uya. If you say the isu is only d'rabanan, mi d'oraita, this is a shchuta ha-ri'uya. You only have a problem here, mi d'rabanan. Now, you could argue over here, you could say that that's the issue. That when the Rabbanan say something is asur, then it becomes asur. The answer might be that's not always the case. When the Chachamim say something is asur, there might be a difference between the Isur the Rabbanan and the Isur d'oraita. An Isur d'oraita is an Isur in the Chefza. The object itself, it becomes an Chefza of Isur. When you say something it's an Isur d'Rabbanan, that's usually the Rabbanan say, you may not eat this object. This object is not Isur, this object's not treif, this object is kasher. Just the Chachamim say to the Gavra, you may not eat this object. And therefore it may be different than in monetary matters, Beitin can actually change the status of the object. Because they have Hefker, Beitin, Hefker, they can actually change the status of the object. But over here, by Isur, the Chachamim can't change something from okay to Isur. They can tell you, you may not eat it anymore, that it is Asur, but they can't make it into physical Isur. That actually might be a nafkamina between the two Shitot over here. When Rabbi Yochanan Samar says that Melechet Shabbat generates Isur, generates an object that is Asur. If you believe that it's Asur Midoraita, that means that the Chetz itself is treif. If you put it into a pot and cook it with something else, it would make the other things treif and make them Isur. On the other hand, if you say it's only Asur Midorabanan, then when you put it in a pot, it may not have an impact on other things because the Isur Midorabanan is on the Gavra. The Gavra may not eat this. But if the Chetz itself is a Chetz Shel Heter, not a Chetz Shel Isur, and therefore, if you cook it together with something else, it may not, or he gives tam to something else, may not give it isur. That may be the difference, or maybe a nafkamina between whether you think it's d'oraita or d'rabanan over here. The other nafkamina is whether it's shchita she'en ruya. According to one who says it's d'oraita, it's clearly a shchita she'en ruya. According to one who says d'rabanan, the Gemara says here, it's a shchita ruya, just, you're not allowed to eat it. If it's a shchita ruya, then how do we explain the brayta? Why the chachamim say you're not chayav in those cases? Why are they patre? The Chachamim say you're a patur, that's on the remaining items in that braita. So there were three things in the braita, shor niskal, avodah zarah, and shechita b'shabbat. When they say that you are patur from tashlumim, that's regards to avodah zarah and shor niskal, where the shechita is ain't ruya. That's why you're patur over there. But by Shabbat, where it's a shechita ruya, in Ochanami, you would be chayav in tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Now Gemara goes back and says, toveach levorat chochavim. This was the question that Echiel raised, which is, if you shacht for Avodah Zarah, came into Shachat Pei Purta, Itzarle, as soon as you begin the Shechita, the animal becomes Asur. Because you're shechting the Shem Avodah Zarah, the Shem Avodah Zarah, the moment you do begin the Shechita, it's Avodah Zarah already, it's Asur Ba'anah. Idach, Hikadabach, Lav Demari Kadabach. When he finishes off the Shechita, he's not shechting the owner's animal anymore. He's shechting Avodah Zarah. And therefore, there should be no obligation of Arba V'Chamisha over here. We don't really have something going on simultaneously over here. Yuni-Zundi be simultaneous. Over there you have Shechita. So you're telling us that the Shechita is what obligates the individual in Arba V'Chamisha. But Arba V'Chamisha take place at a different time than the Shechita for Avodah Zarah. The Shechita for Avodah Zarah, your culpability is from the moment that you start the Shechita. Culpability for Arba V'Chamisha is until you finish the Shechita. So they're not simultaneous, but even in the reverse, which is by the time you finish the Shechita, it's not the guy's animal anymore. It's not his that you're shechting, so it's not tvacho micharo. He already acquired it in a sense. He already ruined the animal by making it avodah zarah, and therefore he never does Shechita on the owner's animal to be chayav, arba v'chamisha, because it wasn't the owner's animal. As soon as he began Shechita, done. Amaro Rova, Rova says, we'll fix that problem, but Omer, Raz Michahu Ovda. That he's only doing the worship of the Avodah Zarah when he finishes the Shechita. So he stipulates that the Shechita of Avodah Zarah will also not be finished or not be as Shechita until he finishes it. When I finish Shechting this will be the Avodah Zarah. So at that moment that he finishes it, it both becomes Avodah Zarah, but he's already Chayav at that moment also in the Arba Chamisha of Shechting the other individual's item, and that's why he would be Chayav Arba Chamisha, or you would say Kamala Dirabi Mine. So Gemara says, Shani Skal Avdi Deyu Katabach. Okay, Shor HaNiskal again. That's not his shor. It's on death row. On death row, the Shor HaNiskal is Asur Ba'Achila, Asur Ba'Ana'ah. So what benefit does he have? When the guy comes and shechs it, he stole it and he shechted it, what type of loss did he create? He's shechting something that's worth nothing. So why should he have to pay Arba V'Chamisha? Amarav V'Achav Ba'Yaskina Ke'on Shemasro L'Shomer. The case here was that this animal was given to a Shomer. Ve'zik Be'Beit HaShomer. And while it was in the house of the Shomer, it went ahead and killed someone. When it killed someone, that's why it's on death row. It was sentenced to death, this animal, because it killed someone while it was in the Shomer's house. V'nigmar dinei bebeit haShomer. And the Beit Din decided, came to a conclusion, sentenced the animal to death while it was still at the house of the Shomer. V'ganavo ganav mebeit haShomer. Then the thief comes and steals it from the house of the Shomer. Rabbi Meir savalak Rabbi Yaakov, savalak Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yaakov, and he holds like Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Rabbi Yaakov, who says that the Shomer can simply hand the animal back and say, Harei shalcha lefanecha. Shomer can hand back the animal to the owner and say, here's your animal back. I don't have to give you anything else. Why? Because the animal's still alive. If it was dead, he couldn't do that because that's not his animal anymore. But as long as the animal's still alive, even if it's on death row, Rabbi Yaakov believes as long as you hand the animal back to the owner, you've done your part. You return the animal. Okay, the animal's on death row, the animal's not worth anything anymore, but you handed him the animal back, you're done. Number two is, V'savar like Rabbi Shimon d'amar, davar agorim d'mamon ki mamon d'ami. In addition that he holds like Rabbi Shimon, who holds that something that causes monetary loss is as if it has monetary status. Over here, the animal itself is valueless. It's worthless. There's nothing. The animal's a zero. Can't eat it, can't get enough from it, it's a zero. Nevertheless, when this individual steals it from the house of the Shomer, he's causing him a loss. Not a real monetary loss, because there's no money involved over here. But he's causing him a loss because he could have returned the animal to the owner and then been exempt from paying the owner for the loss of the animal. So it's davar ha-goreim le-mamon. This animal is worthless. But if he hands this worthless object back to the owner, he would be exempt from having to pay. Now that you stole it, you caused him a monetary loss. Not because you stole money, because you stole an object that would have protected him from being chayav in money. So that's a dover agorim the mamot, and that has, according to Rabbi Shimon, monetary status. And that's what's going over here. Rabbi Meir holds like these two opinions. Therefore, the case of Shor HaNiskal, where the individual steals it and shechs it, even though he stole something worthless, and he's shechting something that is not even the owner's, is worthless, nevertheless, he's culpable over here. Why? Because number one, even after the death sentence is proclaimed on this animal, if the Shomer returns it to the owners, he would have been exempt. And number two, Rabbi Shimon says, when you have an object that protects you from monetary obligations, that's like money. So you really did something, you stole something that had value over here. Even though it didn't have inherent value, it had value in the ability to use it to be returned to the owners. And therefore, when you stole it and shechted it, you stole and shechted something that had value to this individual because he could have returned it to the owners and been exempt from his obligation. Because of that, you are chayav in Arba V'Chamisha over here by Shor HaNiskal. All right, Tosfot asks two questions over here. One is, we asked before the question about doing Shechita and Avodah Zarah. From the moment you do the Shechita by Avodah Zarah, that little minute cut makes it a sur l'avodah zarah. And then when you shecht it, it's not the owner's animal anymore. So the Gemara came up with an answer that it is when he declares that he'll only be avodah zarah when he finishes the shechita, and that's how he gets it to be simultaneous. Tell us what it is. Why don't you say that by anything? Why don't we say by any shechita that the individual is koneh b'shinui? So as he does a shinui in the animal, he's koneh the animal, and therefore it's not the owner's animal anymore, it becomes the thief's animal. If it's a thief's animal, then he's shechting his own animal. He's not shechting the original owner's animal. So Tosafot says, Rerik says, that's not enough of a shinui to be kinyan. The beginning of shechita is not enough of a shinui to say, now it's your animal. It's only maybe at the end of shechita, then you could say it's his animal for be chayav or to be culpable, because at that moment, it's number one, irreversible. But number two is, you've done a significant action that's considered a shinui. But in the beginning of the shechita, that's not considered to be significant enough to make it a shinui, or to make it something that will come into your possession. That's number one. Number two is, Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim ask over here, why is it that Rabbi Meir needs to hold like Rabbi Shimon, that Davar Gorim the Mamon is K'mamon Dami? We know that Rabbi Meir himself says that we're Dain Dini de Garmi, that Beit Din will hold someone culpable for causative losses. So we have in the Gemara describes something called Grama. Grama ben Ezekin is patur. If someone causes damage through Grama, through causative effect, where he does something and then that, by its derivative, causes damage, that individual is not Chayav Nezikin. On the other hand, when it's Garmi, Garmi is where there's more direct damage or loss. It's still causative, but you can more directly correlate it with the individual's action. Over there, there's a machloket in the Gemara and Baba Kama as to whether we're dan dini de garmi. Over here, this is a classic case of dini de garmi. Over here, when the individual shechs the shor niskal, where the shomer could have returned it to the owner. So you're right, he only caused damage. He was a gorein. But it's a direct cause of damage. His stealing and shechting of the animal directly caused damage to this individual because he can't return it to the balim anymore. That's called garmi. Rabbi Meir says that Beit Din will adjudicate cases of Garmi. Beit Din will make him chayav in case of Garmi. That's not Grama anymore, it's Garmi. And says it's direct causation of loss, even though it's still causative, a derivative effect. Nevertheless, you'll be chayav. So why do we have to get to Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Meir himself thinks that Dini de Garmi, Beit Din would make him chayav here because he did it in a way that was so direct, the loss, that he would be held culpable. So Tosafot gives two answers. Number one is Vishm Farshim Tishum Haki Kamara Sphere Lake Rabbi Shimon, Mishum to Rabbi Shimon Kamara Davar Goim Lamon, Abi Mon Linyan Tashlumim Dali Behe. Because he says, Davar Goim Lamon is considered enough Mamon that you even Chayav for Dalit and Hay. You could argue that if Ordai Dini Garmi is that he pays the Karen. He has to compensate him for the animal. To make you Chayav for four or five times, that you have to have real ownership over here for. And that's only true under Rabbi Shimon's version, which is a Devarei Gorim the Ramon is Kim Mamon Dami, meaning it has real ownership. The Shomer has real ownership over here because it's Devarei Gorim the Ramon, and that's what causes you to be Chayav Dal Vehei. According to Rabbi Meir, there's no real ownership over here. It's just that Beit Din will make you Chayav when you do something that's Garmi. Garmi, okay, you're Chayav for the Karen, for the animal that you stole. We're going to multiply it by four or five times? That's certainly not. That's not Dini de Garmi. That's one way Tosafot answers it. The other way Tosafot answers it is, the obligation of Dini de Garmi is only rabbinic in nature, which says that the Rabbanan say, we're going to make you chayav in this case. That doesn't mean it's your money. Doesn't mean that the object is really owned by the shomer. Just the Chamim say, in that case where it's such a direct connection between you and the damage, we're going to make you chayav. But that doesn't change the ownership of the object. Over here, we need ownership, because ownership is what causes dalet behei. When the thief takes it from the owner and then shechs the owner's animal, that's when he's chayav dal vehei. But then you need ownership. Dini de garmi may not cause that ownership and may not generate ownership. Rabbi Shimon Shita, which is Dervar Gorim, the Mamon, Ke Mamon Dami, that generates ownership. Ownership, then we can have dalid vehei. So that's why Rabbi Meir can't hold like himself and just say Dini de garmi. He needs Rabbi Shimon over here to generate that higher level of ownership of the Shomer, so that when the Ganav takes it and shechs it, he's shechting the animal of the Shomer. Rabba Amar, Lolam Betoveach HaYideatzmo. Rabba backs up and says, no, the case here is not a case where a third party did the Shechita, but rather where he did the Shechita himself. Ve'Rabbi Meir, Loke U'Mishalim Itlei, Meitu Mishalim Leitlei. And Rabbi Meir, this was the Havamina we had, and when Reish Lakish said it, that Rabbi Meir holds Loke Mishalim, yes, and maybe Meitu Mishalim, no. The Gemara said, you can't say that because of the Braita. Here, Rabbah says, yes, Eino Hanami. But Meir Lokim Mishalem Itlay, he says that you can have two punishments when it comes to Malkut and Tashlom. Meitu Mishalem Leitlay. Meitu Mishalem, he says, your override, Mita overrides. Now the reason for that, and it may be very logical over here, is that they are derived from two different areas. The reason that you don't look at Mishalem is because they Rishato. They Rishato says you get one Risha, one punishment and not two punishments. The reason that one is exempt by Loki Mishalem is because you can only give one, not two punishments. On the other hand, Meitu Mishalem is Patur. We learned that out of the case of where two individuals are fighting and then they hit a pregnant woman. And whether they have to compensate for the miscarriage of the woman depends on whether the woman is killed by that blow. That's where we learn out Kamala de Rabbi Meis. Learn out a totally different pasuk, which says that if there is a death, then you don't pay. He doesn't have to make payment. So for that, you see, Kamala de Rabbi Meis learned out of a different pasuk. So it's possible that Rabbi Meir, and we know that Rabbi Meir argues on Kedei Rishato. So he may only argue on the fact when you have two punishments that come together, then you can only give one of them. But in Kamalei Derabi Nei, which is learned out of a totally different limud, over there he would hold Kamalei Derabi Nei. And this actually might be a way to explain or differentiate between the two. That it might be that when it comes to Kamalei Derabi Nei, in a case where you have a death penalty that is associated with payment, over there you may be exempt from the payment because of the severity of the punishment, and the punishment might cover everything. And since it covers everything, you might be not only patur b'dei adam, but patur b'dinei shamayim. By Kamala de Rabbi Minei. On the other hand, by Lokei Mishalem, when we say Kedei Rishato, you can only punish him once, not twice. Here it's not because of the severity of the punishment. That's just a Gzera Takatuv. You get one punishment, not two. Over there, it might be that the exemption from paying over there, you would still have to pay, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, because the punishment didn't disappear. The obligation didn't disappear. It's just a Gzera Takatuv. You can only get one punishment, not two. But the obligation is still there. So you could. I heard this from a friend, Rabbi Dr. Abudi, who suggested this mechilok, but it makes a lot of sense. It seems obvious from the differentiation in the limudim over here that by lokei mishalem, a person should be chayav b'dinei shamayim to make up the alternate punishment which he did not get, because it's gzera d'katuva, just to know two punishments. Not saying one is more severe or one covers the other. Whereas b'kamla d'rabim minei, where really the severity of the punishment is what exempts you from the other item. Over there, maybe you're not only patur b'dei adam, but you're even patur b'dinei shamayim. So that would be a way to differentiate. And so here Rava is suggesting within Rabbi Meir, you have such a distinction. That lokei mishalem, he doesn't hold off, but kamalei d'rabim minei, he does hold off. Ah, so then what about the braita that says by toveach u'mocher that he pays four or five times? Shani ani d'chidush hu shechidsha Torah b'knas. Knas is a chidush. So afagav d'mikdel mishalem. Even though he has the death penalty, he still pays, as Rashi says over here. Anything to do with knas is a chidush. It's unusual. So even though he's subject to a death penalty, he's still got to pay. Knas is a chidush. It's something that the Torah penalizes the individual. It's not necessarily associated with the level of damage that is done. It's not associated with the amount of damage that is done. It's a penalty that comes no matter what. That's number one. Number two is a knas. You should generally pay knas or a fine. For instance, a person, when they get fined by the government, they pay the money to the coffers of the government. If a person gets a ticket, gets a doch, over there, the police give him a ticket, he has to pay the money, it goes to the government coffers. So too over here, knas over here should also go to the government coffers. The chiddush of knas over here is that it actually gets paid to the nifga, to the one who got injured or got hurt. So even though, again, it has no association with the level of nezek that's done, and generally, when you have knas, you would pay it to the authorities. You wouldn't pay it to the other party. Over here, the knas, first of all, is paid no matter what the value is, four or five times it's paid. And it's paid to the other individual. It's not restitution. It's not compensation. He only stole the object that's worth the keren. Nevertheless, he's paying four or five times in knas, and he's paying it to the other individual. That's a huge chiddush in knas. That is not subject to the rules of kamalei d'rabim minei. The rules of kamalei d'rabim minei apply to only mamom, not to knas. Knas is a chiddush; they don't apply, and that's what the Tosfot over here says. Mashma, the Rabbi Meir itle lokei mishalem af mamon sheino knas. The Rabbi Meir holds that lokei mishalem, or he doesn't dashen kedei rishato, whether it's mamon or whether it is knas. Either one, he would say that you get lokei mishalem. It's not just by a chiddush of knas; it's even by a chiddush by mamon. Rabbi Meir believes there's no such thing as kedei rishato. And the other way around, those that exempt individuals because of Devi Shato, we saw this earlier in Tosafot, they exempt them both by Mamon and Kenas. No matter what it is, they say Kedevi Shato says one punishment, not two punishments, and therefore that applies by Mamon and Kenas. So by Kedevi Shato, by the case of Loka Mishalem, Rabbi Meir says you are Loka Mishalem, says you're Loka Mishalem, both by Mamon and Kenas. Doesn't make any difference. The Chachamim who say you're a Patur because of Kedevi Shato, they say Loka Ve'eno Mishalem, or Mishalem Ve'eno Loka, depending on whose opinion you think. They say that no matter what, whether it's Kenas or Mamon, they're going to say that. By Kamla Dirabi Mine, we have a differentiation. By Mamon, we're going to say Kamla Dirabi Mine, you're exempt. By Kenas, even though there's a Kamla Dirabi Mine, we're not going to say that it takes effect. Again, there's another distinction between invoking the principle of Kedevi Shato and Kamla Dirabi Mine. By Kamla Dirabi Mine, it only deals with Mamon. Kenas is outside of that rubric. By Kedevi Shato, Lokei Mishalem, that's covering both Mamon and Kenas. There's no differentiation in the din. So again, you see a difference between the din of Kedevi Shato to the din of Kamla Dirabi Mine. Vaz the Rabbo the Tamei, and Rabbo's the Shitato, Dama Rabbo, Ayah Gdi Ganuv Lo. Person has a Gdi, stole a goat. Ut Vacho B'Shabbat, Chayav. Then he is Chayav. Now what happened here is, on a weekday, he stole the goat. Then he shechs the goat on Shabbat. Then he's still Chayav to pay the Karen back to the owner. Shekvar Nitchayev B'Gneiva, Kodem Shevoli De'Isur Shabbat. The Gneiva took place on the weekday, then he was Chayav. His Isur, or the violation of Shabbat, takes place later. So yes, as far as Arba V'Chamishah are concerned, he might be exempt over here because there's Kamli Deraba Minei. But as far as the Karen is concerned, he was Chayav in the Gneiva before he ever became Chayav in the Mita for Shechting on Shabbat. So what do you see here? You see that when it's Chayav before, the Mita doesn't exempt you. They're not simultaneous. It happened beforehand. Ganav etabach b'Shabbat. Patur. If he did the stealing, the theft was on Shabbat, and he shechted on Shabbat, then he's patur. Shemein gneiva ain't tvicha. Because if you can't steal it, then there is no tvicha, ben mechira. Because if he's exempt from the gneiva over here, he's also exempt from the tvicha mechira. What Rabbo is saying over here is a very important din, which is that you just said over here that kamlei d'rabbanei applies by mamon. It does not apply by kenas. So that means if you have a kenas, you're going to pay it. So Rabbo said over here, if the person stole it on a weekday, and then he shechs it on Shabbat, he's going to be chayav for the gneiva because that took place prior to Shabbat. He's also going to be chayav arba v'chamisha kenas. Kenas is not exempted by kamla d'rabbanei, so you're going to pay four or five times when he shechs it on Shabbat. On the other hand, if he does both the theft and the shechita on Shabbat, he's going to be exempt from both of them. Why? Because first of all, as far as the gneiva is concerned, when he pays that amount, that's mamon. He's paying back the keren. That happened on Shabbat. The same times he shechted it, he stole it on Shabbat. He did everything on Shabbat. He violated the Shabbat and what he was doing. So he's exempt from the gneiva because he has kamalei d'rabbi minei. He stole, he lifted it, he did hotza'ah on Shabbat. Whatever he did to shech, or he shechted it in the owner's land, so his theft and his shechita happened simultaneous. That means that he violated Shabbat and did the gneiva at the same time. If that's the case, he's patur for the gneiva because that's mamon. Then it comes to shechita. He should be chayav 4 or 5. 4 or 5 is built up of 3 and 4 plus the Karen. Now that he's exempt from the Karen, he's not going to be chayav 4 or 5. He's only going to be chayav 3 or 4. The Gemara in Baba Kama says, 4 or 5, I was mechayev you. I was not mechayev you 3 and 4. So that means that if it's 3 and 4 times because the Karen's missing, the knas goes away. So what Rabba says is if he steals before Shabbat, then shechs it on Shabbat, he'll be chayav for the Karen because that took place before the Mita, and he'll be chayav for the 4 and 5 times because that's a knas, and your chayav, kamali d'rabbanei, doesn't help you. The other hand, if the theft and the shechita take place on Shabbat, you're going to be patur legamrei. Karen, because that happened with the chiyuv mita. Knas, because it's no longer the knas that the Torah says. It's not 4 or 5 times. You only pay 3 or 4 times. That's not what the Torah says. That drops the knas, and you're not chayav in the knas at all. So on Shabbat, you'll be completely patur. If you do everything on Shabbat, person does it on the weekday, the gneiva and the shechita on Shabbat, then it'll be chayav in everything. So that's what Rabbah teaches us in this din. Shein gneiva in tvicha v'en mechira v'amar Rabbah hayak di ganuv lo utvacho b'machteret. Another case, Rabbah says in a case where person stole a gdi, then he takes it and shechs it in an underground tunnel. Where he's tunneling into someone's house and he shechs it in the tunnel. Chayav, in that case he's chayav, shar nitchayev b'gneiva kodem b'machteret. Shavoli de yisur machteret. He's chayav in gneiva before he ever became culpable for being in a machteret. The din is in Parshat Mishpatim that a person who tunnels into an individual's house to steal things, that at that time the owner is allowed to stand up to the ganav and kill him. His damim, ein lo damim. If he kills him in the tunnel, then he is patur because the person who tunneled into the house is coming to steal. If he meets the owner, you know what he's going to do? He's going to kill the owner as well. So the owner is given protective rights, defensive rights to protect his house and kill the individual when he's in the machteret. So over here, he stole it first. When he stole it, he wasn't chayav mita. Now he's in the tunnel, or he tunnels into the house and he shechs it in that tunnel. During the time that he's in the tunnel, he's chayav mita. So that's kamli derabbi minei. But the kamli derabbi minei doesn't help him. Number one, because the gneiva took place beforehand. Number two is, dalet vehei is a din in knas. Kamli derabbi minei doesn't overcome knas. So over there, he's going to be chayav for everything. But on the other hand, ganav vitavach v'machteret, if he stole it and shechted it in the machteret itself, patur, then he's patur the gnei gamri. Because the gneiva, the keren, kamli derabbi minei, he has a death sentence when he's in there. The person can kill him while he's in the machteret. So he's patur from the keren. Ah, knas is not exempted by kamli derabbi minei, but over here you don't have four or five times. You only have three or four times because the keren's missing. Patur the gamre. Shemein gneiva, ein tvicha, ven mechira. Petzricha. Why did Rabba bring both cases of machteret and Shabbat? They're both telling us the same din. That if the gneiva takes place beforehand, you're going to be chayav in everything. If the gneiva takes place simultaneous with the tvicha mechira, then you're not going to be chayav anything. Tzvicha, di yashminun Shabbat mishum di isura isur olam. By Shabbat, the isur lasts forever. No matter when we figure out that this guy violated Shabbat, he will get the death penalty. Even after the fact, he gets the death penalty. Aval machteret isur sha'ahu emelo. By machteret, it's only temporary. While he's in the tunnel, then his life is free. I mean, the owner can kill him. As soon as he exits the tunnel on the other side, he's not chayav mita anymore. It's only while he's in the tunnel, tunneling into the house, he's chayav mita. Afterwards, there's no culpability. So maybe over there, I would not have said what Rabba said. Maybe machteret, if I just told him the case of machteret, I would have thought that's more chamur because there's no hatra. You don't have to warn him. The owner's given defensive rights to kill this guy because the fact that he tunneled in, that's his warning. The fact that he tunneled in, that's already his warning that his life is in danger because he came in to kill the Baal. So therefore the Baalim can defend themselves. About Shabbat, to buy Hatra'ah, Emelo, by Shabbat, where you acquire Hatra'ah for the person to be Chayav, maybe over there we would not say it. Katzricha, therefore I needed both cases. That's why Rabba brought us down both cases of Machteret and Shabbat. Teaches the din is the same in both these cases, despite the fact that each one of them has a Chumrah associated with it. Now Tosafot claims that this statement of Rabba is a libo de Rabbi Meir. Is according to Rabbi Meir, who says that Knas is a Chiddush. Since Knas is a Chiddush, Kamla de Rabbi Meir is not overrided. And that's in Shita Rabbi Meir. So Rabba says, in Shita Rabbi Meir, this would be the din. But that doesn't mean that he holds like it. Now that's a big Chiddush from two perspectives. One is here, you have Rabba explaining Rabbi Meir's Shita, and Rabbi Meir's not the Alocha. Why is Rabba giving all this trouble to go through this and say that's not like Rabbi Meir? That's number one. We had the same thing before. Rabbi Acha and Rabbi Ino explained the position of Rabbi Yochanan and Sanbar. They had a machlokes where it was d'oraita d'rabbanan in Rabbi Yochanan and Sanbar, which would seem to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan and Sanbar is the halacha. Otherwise, why are Amoraim arguing? In the end, all the Rishonim say that's not the case. The halacha there is like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Yochanan and Sanbar. Nevertheless, Rabbi Ino and Rabbi Acha were clarifying the position of Rabbi Yochanan and Sanbar. So you could argue the same thing over here, that Rabba is just clarifying the shita of Rabbi Meir. But in general, we believe that if a Moraim are explaining the shita of an individual, that it should be that we hold like that shita. And for that reason, the Tosafot HaRosh says the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. But you could see someone arguing, disagree with Tosafot, and say that Rabba's statement is not only made in the shita of Rabbi Meir, but even in the shita of the Chachamim. Even the Chachamim would agree that by Kamla D'Rabba Minei, Knas is an exception. And Kamla D'Rabba Minei does not work on Knas. That is a possibility over here. But if that's the case, then you have to explain why. By the case of the Bright over there that they say, you are patur from Arba and Chamisha, even if it is a Knas. So you'll have to come up with an alternate explanation for the Chachamim. We said before, there might be it's Rabbi Shimon. It's Rabbi Shimon who says, it's a Shechita Sheini Ruya. Shechita Sheini Ruya, that's why they're patur over there. Not because Kamla D'Rabba Minei, but because of Shechita Sheini Ruya. So here you have Machloket. Tosafot believes that this is all according to Rabbi Meir only, that Knas is not overridden by Kamalei D'Rabba Minei. The other Rishonim will believe that this is broader. Even the Rabbanan agreed to that position. Now, Amar Rav Papa. Haita para gnuva lo utivacha. Person has a cow that he stole, and then he shechs it b'Shabbat. Chayav. He's chayav. Shkarnit chayav b'gneiva kodem shevod l'day yisur Shabbat. He's chayav for the geneva before he came to Yisrael Shabbat. Hayta para she'ula. On the other hand, she'ula lo. If it was a para that he borrowed, u'tvacha b'Shabbat, and he shechs it on Shabbat, patur. Then he is patur from tashlumim, because at the time that he shechs it, that's when he becomes obligated to pay back the owner of the shor. When he shechted it, he's chayav for shechting on Shabbat. That's kamloi d'rabim minei. The penalty is not a knas, it's simply tashlumim. Restitution to the owner where he stole his para by shechting it on Shabbat. So Amalei Rav Acha Brei Derovo the Rav Hashi, Rav Papa Para Atalash Meinon. Rav Papa came to teach us about a para. Rav Papa's din is exactly what Rabba said before. Rabba said it about a gdi. Now Rav Papa comes and says it about a para. That's what he came to teach us. That the same din that you have by a gdi applies by a para. And that's the difference between arba and chamisha, is the size of the animal, whether it's a shor or a seh. So what? One comes to teach you about four times, one comes to teach you five times, the din should be the different. Rav Papa's teaching us no chiddush whatsoever. Why did he come and say this? Samalei, Rav Papa, shu'ula atu liyoshmi'inan. Rav Papa's coming to teach the din of borrowing. You're right, in Ochanan, with regards to stealing and then shechting it, that's the same din as Rabba. One's by a gdi, one's by a parab, it's the same din. By shu'ula, he's coming to teach us something. Why? Sakadat chamina, I would have thought, from the time that he does mishicha, the kinyan mishicha on his animal, to become chayav as a shoel, that takes place right at the time he does mishicha. When he does mishicha, he does the kinyan mishicha on it, now he's got to feed the animal, it's his responsibility. Maybe we should say the same thing, that he becomes obligated in anything that happens to the animal from that moment forward. It is true. He is obligated from that moment forward. Anything that happens to the animal, he has to pay. But when does he become culpable? So that's the question here. When he shechs the animal, is that when he becomes chayav in the keren? Or do we say retroactively, since at the time that he borrowed it, that's when he made the kinyan, he's really chayav from day one in the value of the animal. Now that would make a big difference. If he's chayav from day one in the animal, and now when he shechs it, he just makes it, then now he has to pay it back because he can't return the animal, then he would be chayav in this case. That means that the obligation, the chiyuv, already happened long time ago. When he shechs it on Shabbat, there's no kamalei d'rabim in it because he's chayav from day one on the animal. Rav Papa comes along and says, that's not the way to look at it. Even though he is culpable or he has to make restitution for the animal from day one, he only becomes obligated in that restitution when he kills the animal, when he shechs the animal. That moment is when he becomes chayav. Since that's the moment when he becomes chayav, then there is kamalei d'rabim in. That's the kamash malon. That Rav Papa comes to teach us. Amar Rava, hiniach lehen aviem para she'ula. Their father left them a para that was borrowed. I mean, they inherited the para from their father. Mishtamshim ba koyimei she'elta. They're allowed to utilize it for the remainder of the time that he had it borrowed. He borrowed it for duration. The father passed away. The children can continue to use the animal for the duration of that borrowing. Meita, if it dies, ein chayavin bonsa. They do not have to replace it. Now, normally it was their father, he would have to replace it because the shoel is chayav in onsin. But over here, since they are not the shoelim, they are not the borrowers themselves, therefore they are patur from having to pay if an ones happens, if something happened by accident. Kisvarim, shalavim hi, utivachua. They thought it was their father's animal. They didn't know it was borrowed. They thought it was their father's animal, and they shecht it. Vachalua, and then they eat it. Mishamim, dmei basar bizol. They pay for the meat. They have to replace the value of the meat that they had over here. Bizol, the cheaper meat. Question how you do this, whether it means the cheaper money, the cheaper meat. Whatever it means is that they're not paying back high-priced meat. They're paying back very basic meat. They have to pay it back. The father leaves them property, which is possessions that have recourse. That's a nickname for real property or land. If their father leaves them land, chayavim l'shalem, then they have to pay. So now, when does that come up? The idea being that if the father left them land, that if the father was already chayav, then his land was already obligated before he died. If his land is chayav, then there's a lien on the property becomes encumbered to the damage done, and therefore when the children inherit it, they have to pay back the owners because the land already was obligated to the owners. So now, which part of Rava's statement does this go on? Because we had one statement that says that if they use it, when the father borrowed it, they don't have to pay back. And then it says that if they shecht it, they don't have to pay back basar bizol. And which of those does the statement now that Rava says that if there's property, that they have to pay it back? Which one of those is it? So we have a machloket. The one that says, certainly they would say on the Seifo Pliga de Rav Papa, they argue on Rav Papa. Because they say, in the Reisha, if there's land there, you're chayav to pay it back. Even though they didn't borrow it, they're still chayav and onsin. Why? Because from day one when the father borrowed it, he became chayav to repay that animal. Day one was the land there, yes. So his land became encumbered to pay for the animal to be returned to the Shoel. When he dies, the property's there, and so the animal's there, they use it, it dies. He was already chayav to replace the animal from day one. The property was there. The father already became chayav then, and the children have to repay it. That's against Rav Papa. Because Rav Papa says you only become chayav from the moment the animal dies, not from day one. This is saying you're chayav from day one, and therefore, the property becomes encumbered, and the Yitomim have to pay it back. Because the property was already chayav before it came into their possession. And the same will be true, of course, in the Seifa where they shechted it, of course they have to pay back. There they should have known better, the father should have told them. So they certainly should have paid it back, and they'll have to pay back the full amount of the animal, not just cheap meat. The one that says it's on the Seifa, Varesha lo, but on the Resha not. Vahainu de Rav Papa, and that's similar to Rav Papa Shita. In the Seifa where it's really Pshia, because the father should have told them about this, that the animal was borrowed, or they shouldn't have shechted it, they should have checked it out before they shechted it. Over there, we're going to make them pay, at least basar zol. Then, if there was land there already, we're going to say it was encumbered already to this animal, because the father should have said something, he was a posheya. On the other hand, the case where they simply keep using it as a sheila, and it dies, that's ones. By the case of ones, they're not going to be held culpable for that, because the culpability only started at the moment of death. The moment of death, the father's already passed away, they can't, their land or their property is not going to become encumbered. And that's like Rav Papa, that the obligation only happens at the moment of death. It doesn't happen prior to that point in time. Bishlama Rav Yochanan lo amar ki Reish Lakish. Okay, understand why Rav Yochanan didn't hold like Reish Lakish. Because Reish Lakish over here sets up the Mishnah, Hamani. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Meir he. Rav Yochanan says, no way. I don't want to have Rabbi Meir be the author of the Mishnah because that's a dat yachid. I'd rather be the Rabbonim that are the authors of the Mishnah. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan did not subscribe to that position. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan explained our Mishnah in a case back on Daf Lamed Bet, who said that the case of our Mishnah is a case where he argued on Ula. It says the case of the Mishnah is a case where Rabbi Yochanan says that he didn't give Hatra'ah. Because there was no Hatra'ah, there's no Chiyuv Malkot. That's why he's Mishalem. Had he given Hatra'ah, he would have been Patur. Rabbi Yochanan set up the Mishnah this way, and not like Reish Lakish, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah can be even according to the Rabbanan. Because it has to do with whether he gave Hatra'ah or he didn't give Hatra'ah. The Mishnah in Makot was a case where he gave Hatra'ah. That's why there's Makot, no Tashlamim. The case in our Mishnah is a case where he gave no Hatra'ah. That's why he's Mishalem and ain't a lokeh. So that's all according to the Chachamim as well. Reish Lakish over here says, no, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir says, lokeh u'mishalem, and that's the author of our Mishnah. So that's what it says over here. So Rabbi Yochanan didn't hold like Reish Lakish because he doesn't want to set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. He wants to set it up like the Rabbanan. To kamukim like a Rabbanan. Hello, Reish Lakish, my time alone like Rabbi Yochanan. Why doesn't Reish Lakish hold the Rabbi Yochanan shita? Amar lecha came into ilu atrube patur. Since if you gave hatra'ah, you'd be patur. Kilu atrube nami patur. Even without hatra'ah, even without the punishment itself, you are patur. V'azdu l'tamayu. And now they are going into their own reasoning. In a case where you have a chayav mita, shogeg. There was no hatra'ah. Chayav malkiyot, shogegim. No hatra'ah. This basically is on the belief that the purpose of hatra'ah is to change a person from shogeg to mezid. Person shogeg unless they have hatra'ah, which makes them into mezid. So this is the equivalent of saying there was no hatra'ah over here. No hatra'ah in a case where it would have been a capital offense and it would have been put to death. He's not going to be put to death because he's a shogeg. He's chayav malkot, but no hatra'ah, so there's no malkot over here. The davar acher means that it was a monetary obligation at the same time, whether with malkot or whether with the death penalty. Rabbi Yochanan bar chayav, he has to pay the money. Because there's no hatra'ah, you pay the money. Reish Lakish amar, patur. Reish Lakish says you are patur, cause Reish Lakish believes that even in a case of shogeg, kamla dirabi minei or kedevi shato applies. In a case of mezid, it also applies. Rabbi Yochanan says it only applies by mezid, by a case of hatra'ah, by a case of no hatra'ah, you're not protected by kamalei derabamei, you're not protected by kedei rishato. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav da'alo atrabei. Rabbi Yochanan says you're chayav over here because there was no hatra'ah. Reish Lakish amar patur, kevin dilu atrabei patur, kilo atrabei nami patur. Since there is enough culpability here that if there was hatra'ah, you would have been chayav. So here, you're off on a technicality because there wasn't hatra'ah. But the severity of the crime that you did is still there. And because of that, you're going to be exempted from it. So again, this goes back to the views of commonly derabbinate Kedevi Shato. Rabbi Yochanan says you have to actually be chayav in order to exempt you from the other object. It's not enough that you did something that was so severe that it exempts you from the other thing, but it's the punishment itself that exempts you. Therefore, when there's hatra'ah, you're exempt. When there's no hatra'ah, you're not exempt. Reish Lakish says, no, it has to do with the severity of the crime. The severity of the crime that you did then obviates the need to deal with the other object. So you're not getting punished, okay? But you still did something so severe that it wipes out any culpability or maybe even wipes out the chiyuv in general from the other object. And that's Reish Lakish's opinion. Eighth favorite Reish Lakish is the Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, the source for commonly the Rabbi Yinei is V'lo yeh ason anoshi anesh. If there is no death over here, anoshi anesh, he has to pay for the miscarriage. It's in the case where they're fighting. And instead of hitting the other party that he was trying to hit, he hits a pregnant woman and either kills her or causes her to miscarry. I mean, he miscarries either way, but does he have to compensate? The pasuk says, "Lo yason," if she doesn't die, anoshi anesh, she pays for the miscarriage, implying that my love, ason mamash, that she dies. So if she dies, whether it happened b'shogeg or whether it happened b'mezid, doesn't matter. As long as she dies, he's exempt from the payment because there was an ason. There was death here. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it doesn't mean that there was an ason, it means din ason. Doesn't mean that there was, she died. It means that he was held accountable for her death. Ason means his death, not her death. It means that Beit Din says that he's going to be punished with death. That's only in a case where there is hatra'ah. Case of shogeg, yeah, maybe she died, but he's not going to die. In that case, he will have to pay the money. Ikad Amrei, some pose the question just the opposite way around, which is Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan and the Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan posed the question Reish Lakish, lo yason. Anoshi Anesh, my love, din ason. Lo yason references the party that did the killing over here. If he is not put to death, then he has to pay. But if he's put to death, he is exempt from paying. That makes it sound like Rabbi Yochanan, if there's hatra'ah, you're patur. No hatra'ah, you're not patur. My love, din ason. Well, Rabbi Yochanan says it's ason mamash. It's literally ason, the woman dying. Even though, as Tosafot points out, that if you look at the latter part of the pasuk, it says, din ason yeh, is definitely talking about din ason. Im ason yeh is definitely talking about the party that killed her. That if there is ason, because there it says k'tiv, v'natata nefesh taka nefesh. So over there, it's clearly talking about the culpability or the punishment, the sentencing of that individual. Nevertheless, Reish Lakish believes that the first half of the pasuk of ason yeh is talking about the woman herself and not about the party that did the killing. And so therefore, each one of them, they'll explain the pasuk their way. Reish Lakish will say that when it says ason here, it means if the woman dies, there's Kimle the Rabbi Mine. It doesn't matter whether you're going to be held accountable for that or not. The fact that the woman died is enough to exempt you from the payment. That's Reish Lakish Shita. Yochanan says, no, imason yeh means that the individual is being punished by Beit Din. He's going to die. If he's going to die, he's patur from the tashlumim. But if he's not going to die, he's chayav from the tashlumim, even though the woman died over here because the ason is his ason. If he dies, he's exempt. He doesn't die, he's not exempt. But Shogeg, he's not going to die, therefore he's not exempt and he has to pay. And that's the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And that explains their differences in explaining the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan explains our Mishnah in a case where there was no hatra'ah. It was a Shogeg case. Therefore there's no protection of Devi Shato, there's no protection of Kamalei Derabbi Minei. Because he believes Shogeg, there is no din of Kamalei Derabbi Minei. That's why he explains our Mishnah as a case without hatra'ah, even according to Rabbanan. Reish Lakish can't do that because Reish Lakish believes that even if you're Shogeg, you still have a din of Kedevi Shato, you still have a din of Kamalei Derabbi Minei, you're Patur. So Shogeg doesn't do anything for you. You'd still be Patur for Tashlumim. So why are you paying it on Mishnah? Answer, Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah's Rabbi Meir, who says, Lokei Mishalem doesn't hold of Kedevi Shato. And that's the answer of Reish Lakish. And then we saw with regards to Meitu Mishalem. What's the din of Rabbi Meir with regards to Meitu Mishalem? In the beginning we said that Rabbi Meir definitely holds that just like Kedevi Shato doesn't apply, so too commonly the Rabbi Meir does not apply. Then we had Rabba who came along and said maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Meir believes that Lokei Mishalem, no Kedevi Shato, but commonly the Rabbi Meir applies, but there's an exception to that rule because of Knas. By Knas, we don't say Kamle de Rabba Mine. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph.